So the title of the talk tonight is The Big View, The Big View, Compassion and Equanimity. And what most of us have been experiencing in this wild retreat is indeed moments of love and the heart opening, sensitivity, and then shakiness, fears, pain, and confusions, and then love again, and then in one day, what a journey, yeah? Many of you, or maybe all of you, what a journey in one day. Total lunar park, roller coaster, fairground, you know, circus of the heart, and the same with the mind. Moments of quiet, and then the mind shouts, kind of crazy mind stuff, arising, shouting, cacophonia of thoughts, and this where they come from, and God knows. And then a moment of quiet, a beat. But one thing that you should kind of be aware of, that all these dramas of the human being are only dramas if we look at them from the inside. Meaning, from the subject or the experiencer of the kirkas plimi, the inner circus. We are the audience, but we're looking at it from the inside. Imagine that we looked at it from the outside. How would it look? What's the outside? The outside is the whole world. The outside is life. Imagine if we had a point of view, Nukudah Mabat, of life that looks at our up and down and up and down and up and down. How would life look at it? So we can do that. And in a way, we were and we are doing that, which is to a little bit stand back, stand out, stand above or underneath. And from that point of view, looking again at our stuff, the dramas. As much as we can do that, somehow the dramas are not so dramatic. We are less the main actor in our own movie. And instead, we're standing back and saying, yeah, interesting movie. You know, who's the main actor? Oh, I am. Okay. All right. But I'm still watching the movie. Vipassana practice, mindfulness practice, awareness practice is the wisdom that gives us a bigger view. The bigger view is less dualistic, meaning that the heart says, disaster, fear, something's going to happen. Oh, love, peace, quiet. Two things, two worlds. They're dualistic. This nice, this not. This plus, this minus. This pleasant, unpleasant. Safety, danger. Black, white, hot, cold. Wise, stupid, clear, dull. My body is pleasant, my body hurts. Dualistic. So our wisdom practice, the heart, the vipassana practice, is giving us a different, a wider view than the dualistic view. We see it more like a kaleidoscope and less like, oh, this, tovli rali. Good for me, not good for me. Like the tree of tovli rali that got us kicked out of Gan Eden is this dualistic tree of I took it in, the subject, me. I took in the fruit of the tree in Gan Eden. I took it. And dualism, tovli rali, got us kicked out of Gan Eden. But the bigger view is the tree of life, Ha'etz HaChaim, which is in the middle of Gan Eden, and there is no dualism. That's the tree of life. And there's no dualism in life itself. It's just life. So the bigger view is part of what we're doing and is really important, that we open the view from the small dualistic self or subjective inside picture, and we get an outside picture. And the outside or the bigger picture would ask you, who is it that's looking out of your eyes right now? Who is it that's looking out of your eyes? Or what is it that's looking out of your eyes right now? Another way of describing this is that the more we practice awareness, that the container, I talked about being inside, like container, our experience, but the container can get bigger. So we can hold the ups and the downs, the tovli rali, the pleasant, unpleasant, the heart that says pain and the heart that says love. And we can hold all of that. We are bigger than that. And that's another way of looking at it. And we can really feel that in our practice, that we are sitting here quietly and more we are able to hold what comes up. We are a bigger container. When we, with wisdom, understand the bigger container, one of the places that we can understand, the wisdom that we can understand, we really begin to understand the Buddhist teaching from the inside. For example, the first noble truth of the Buddha, dukkha, pain. Not only, there is also sukha, which is pleasure. The Buddha didn't say there's only pain in human experience. But what's interesting is that dukkha is not personal. All beings going through the same experiences. Therefore, we don't have to take it on ourselves. Our fears are the fears of all beings. Our concerns are the concerns of all beings. Our loves, our fears, our joys, are the experiences are shared. So dukkha is not personal, and this really helps us. And someone was saying this morning to us about how it's such a relief, they were saying, such a relief to young people to realize that they don't have to take all their suffering personally. That there's something there, universal in dukkha. Don't have to take it personally. what a relief. Well, it's not all on my shoulders. It's I can blame samsara. Oh, great, okay. embodiment. Hitgalmut is embodiment. To be in a body. So it's a maybe difficult English word, so maybe Hitgalmut is the Hebrew for that? I don't know.
Yes, Stephen.
That's right? Okay.
I
did, embodiment. But it's being in a body. It's arriving in a body. Arriving in a body is no joke. Although, you have to laugh. It's such a crazy thing, this body. Who wants this thing? It's completely crazy. What is it? Why is it like this? What's it like this for? What's it do, this body? It is a joke, but it's also completely no joke and completely a joke. But embodiment is what's happening, and we arrive in a body and we do struggle, and it doesn't matter whether we're an ant or a chaydak or an elephant or a human being. Our experience is the same, that we arrive in a body and we have to somehow survive and keep this body going and look after it and worry about it. And not only that, but we have an extra problem being human beings, that not only do we have to look after the body, and we spend most of our life looking after the body, we spend the other part of the life looking after the self, which is meant to look after the body. But in the end, all we do is look after the self. And the self is a very big crying baby that we need to look after it all our life. And non-stop look after this big, overblown crying baby that all the time we have to look after it and pay attention to it and make it nice and make it feel good and make it protected and make it feel ego and make it successful and give it lots of money. And it's a couple of nights ago I invited Toma into my room here to watch a singer from India, a woman that I really love, and I love not so much her music, but the group or the castot, the group that she belongs to, because they're a group of wandering singers in Bengal in India, and I met them when I was in India many years ago, and I also met them in London when they came to London, and they sing mystical songs, and they are the kind of spiritual teachers of the villages. They go around the villages and they sing the teaching, and we were watching this woman, and unbelievable. She was singing with tears flowing down her face, singing with heart, with tears flowing. What was she saying? Why was the cry? What was the tears about? The tears were about what happened that I was dropped into time. That was what she was crying. Amazing, huh? Why have I been dropped into time? And she was crying, singing this. I'm drowning in time. She was singing, basically, I'm in samsara, the ocean of time. Help, let me out. So our big view is really important. A bigger view than the ups and downs of the heart and of the mind. And the big view brings us together with all life. We can look at a tree and say, ah, I can see your struggle to survive. We can look at an ant and say, ah, I see your struggle, you're like me. You're also struggling to survive, to make babies, to have food, to run, to this, to live. You're like me. And of course we can look at each other and say, we're like each other. In embodiment, in samsara. And that is the basis of compassion. That view, bigger view, is compassion. So we can change the view of compassion as chemla, compassion, in its deepest sense. It's a very big view. It's an understanding that we are all together in having been born. All beings are as one in the network of life. All born into bodies and all going through the same time, struggle, living and dying. And it's... So how do we practice compassion? What can we do to develop compassion? And I'm going more now into the practical world, which very, you know, things to do. First thing is we need to kind of get close to dukkha, to pain. We need to understand pain and be intimate with pain. When we're intimate with pain, we see that the pain doesn't just belong to us. When we see that the pain doesn't just belong to us, then compassion is natural. For example, someone comes to you arguing with you, you got a point of view and someone really argues with you, maybe you say something, you dare to say something about peace in the Middle East with Palestinians, you dare, and you get it on your head very fast from others. But actually, imagine that you could feel the pain of the person who is arguing with you, because they feel threatened by your view. Your view could be the opposite, by the way. I am not talking about right or left or anything. Your view would threaten somebody, but what you can see is their fear that your view is somehow threatening their self. As soon as you see the pain of somebody else, everything has changed. The whole picture has changed. You see their pain, you see maybe your own pain, and something joins you together. And the view inside, instead of protection, I have to protect myself, someone is attacking me with their views, you move to compassion. Compassion has changed the picture because you see your pain and the other person's pain. I remember one of the moments in one of our peace work when we were bringing Palestinians and Israelis together to dialogue. And I remember one moment where we were really touched by compassion because a Palestinian child, I think maybe 8 years old, 9 years old, was crying, and he said, look, you Israelis, I don't want anything from you, I don't need anything from you, I need one thing from you Israelis, that you've come to visit us, it's wonderful, but I need one thing from Israelis, and that is to listen to my story. That's all I want. And I know that would make everything different. I want somebody, but nobody's listening. And it was, we really felt the compassion to hear the boy, he was crying, saying, all I want from you and the Israelis over there is to listen to my story of my life. So, for practice is about seeing dukkha as something shared. And in the real heat of life, someone fighting with you, someone arguing with you, your partner complaining, it doesn't really matter where. The minute you can sort of touch the pain behind it, everything is changed, and the haganatiyut, the protection, changes to compassion. And if you keep doing that, the compassion grows. And you will be, it will be a language of the mind and the heart. Another place to practice compassion is to remember your goodness. Everybody here, in fact, every human being and every non-human being has natural goodness. We have it in us. We actually want to help others. We actually don't want more suffering of ourselves and others. There's something in us very natural. We want to hold others. Compassion is the womb, is the rechem. Rachamim in the old Hebrew is wombs in plural, no? Wombs, more than one. Rechem, rachamim. But it, I think. But it's ancient word. It really means the womb. It does mean that. And compassion is a womb. And we have that sense of holding, of being a womb, of all of us really a mother in a way to others. So there's something in us very natural that wants goodness. And there's a place, keep paying attention to the goodness that we have in our hearts already. And, you know, encourage it. Another place of practice for compassion is working with the blocks to compassion, the machsomim. And a lot of that is about me. The blocks to compassion are basically me. What I want, what I fear, what I don't like, what I... the other, Simi talked about that. I'm okay, but the other, I don't want them, and I don't want those, and I don't... And it's kind of... That selfing is blocked to compassion. And if we keep staying within the protection and holding protection, it's hard for us to be compassionate. We'll be in the protection business. We all have examples of limits to our compassion. What do we do when we wake up in the morning in a guest house in India and there's, again, 50 beggars outside the door? What do we do every day? Kapzanim. 50 kapzanim b'chutz l'deret shel ha-guest house shelanu. Od pam. Gam hayom. Ani natati lehem etmol. Lama hem adayin po? Limits. knowing those limits, meeting those limits. There's a phrase that I learned, Aniim Ircha Kodmim. As, Maze Ircha?
Your city.
No. Bidyuk, Maze Ircha, your city. Ani mabir et zeh. To me, Ircha can be the whole world. The whole world is Ircha. Or it can be this, only my friends, I'm just busy with my friends and my group and my Ele, you know, Ele Lov, Ele Ken, but I'm just with them and my neighbors know my. What is Ircha? How far is the limit of Ircha? Where does it get to? So here we touch our limits, and by moving the limits and seeing that they need not be there, they are just habits of mind in samsara, we can push those limits all the time. It doesn't mean that you have to give every day to all the beggars, kol hakapzanim b'chutz l'gesthasher, b'glal ani tzirich l'dchof et ha'gvulot sheli, v'az ani chayav latet kol hakesef l'kol hakapzanim. You can, but it means explore the limits, touch the limits, know the limits. What is the limit? Okay, ani matil ircha achshav ze lo rak ha. Am sheli, ze am sham, or ze ele, or ele. And very often the blocks to compassion are our vulnerability, our pigyut, and we feel vulnerable. And because of that, we feel we can't be compassionate, because we feel vulnerable. We feel shavrirut, we feel a little bit fragile. But vulnerability is a big power for compassion. If we allow vulnerability, pigyut, we touch it, we are living with it, we're living with the truth of our vulnerability, we again join all beings. We again join the truth of all beings that are vulnerable. Any minute we're here and we disappear. We're just here for a moment, and then whoop, gone. This is vulnerable. If we're there with that, it actually increases compassion. We are vulnerable with all beings. I don't know if I'm going to be here tomorrow. Who can say? That's not a problem. That's a source of liberation and compassion. That sense, living on the edge, is just waking up the heart and waking up the mind. So final point about practice. Compassion, chemla, and metta also happen by themselves. This indeed is a metta retreat, but any authentic spiritual path, it doesn't have to be the Dharma, will bring you to compassion. Look at the famous story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that he was in his cave for so long. And according to the story that I understand, he went out of his cave and he saw people kind of doing stupid things. Maybe they were working on the land on Shabbat, or maybe they were... He was so angry and he cursed, and someone with him, maybe it was his son, you know the story, it might have been his son, but maybe I got the story all wrong, but never mind. Said to him, sorry, go back to the cave, though your wisdom may be, but wisdom without compassion doesn't work. Go back to the cave. Come out again when you can love everybody, when you can be compassionate to them and them and them and them. So spiritual life will release compassion by itself because it's about the big view, not the small view of the me. And it doesn't matter which spiritual life you're choosing, except it has to be authentic. And in the Dharma, we look at the roots of suffering, like Simi was saying, greed, hate, and delusion. We explore inner life and discover how inner life is so dynamic and free and flowing and not stuck. We undo the farek, we undo tavniyot, forms, fixations, views, patterns, habits, stories, all the structures there that are holding us in prison, that we, by wisdom, we see they're dynamic, they're free. Every story is just there for a moment and gone. We don't need to identify with it, we don't need to believe it. The tavniyot, psikologi, ledugma, patterns of thinking, they're just there, they come, they go, we don't need to believe them, we don't need to think that we're a victim, we don't need to think, we don't need any of it. We can look through it. And when things get more free and dynamic, then the love and the compassion, the metta and the karuna, they arise by default, beirat mechdal. When everything else is not covering them, they appear by themselves. You cannot not get up in the morning and love the first person that you see in the street, because there's no blocks to that love. There's just there, there's life, that person is there and you're there, and why not? It happens by itself. And so love and compassion will arise when we undo the blocks in our daily life, in our relationships, you know, how relationships are full of expectations and needs and pressures, but if we let go of them, the relationship becomes a garden with our partners, with our family, with our friends. Letting go the images, the tavniyot, the habits, the pressures, the expectations of the other, the need that we have from the other, letting go, and suddenly we see the other as a full human being, and love will happen by itself, and compassion will happen by itself. The image of the bodhisattva is an image which is really, it's a Mahayana image, but it's really a powerful image. And the bodhisattva is someone that understands compassion in the biggest sense, and their life is devoted to actions based on compassion. And there's one action, really, there's only one action, and that is action that brings others to freedom and liberation. There is only that action in the end for the bodhisattva. So it's an image, and it's a good image to, when we ask ourselves, okay, with understanding, if we really understand the compassion, so what do we do with our life? It's a little bit what I mentioned today, dana. Dana is one answer to this. We give, we make people happy, we garden, leginun, we give food to the world, to others, to and part of that being a bodhisattva, and by the way, there's a lot of bodhisattvas around, but sometimes they get despaired, they get fed up, they think it's not happening, I can't bring change, the world, it doesn't work, it doesn't work for me. I mean, I've had a lot of experience with people working in amutot, NGOs for peace or social change, Shinui Chevrati. I had quite a lot of experience working with organizations. And it's amazing how difficult it is sometimes if your heart is full of compassion and you want to give, but the mind and the self is all the time measuring. B'medidot. How successful? How not successful? Kama asiti? Kama lo asiti? Kama shinui she'ani asiti? Kama shinui she'lo? Ma atotzaot she'tzurich? Agia, lo agia, agia, lo agia. Call it so much pressure. And it's just an example, taking off the pressure. And the pressure comes with then mazeb, peace activists that are fighting each other all the time. they have meetings in the vadot of the amutot, screaming at each other. We're meant to be a peace organization. Wait, stop. You'd be surprised. Compassion leads to action. Compassion, in a way, is action. And that's why compassion is in the Kabbalah on the side of the male, not on the side of the female. And also in the Tibetan world, compassion is seen as active. And it's making change. It's making happiness and liberation in samsara. This is the movement. Compassion is active. It goes with action. Compassion is not about sitting in a cave and withdrawing. And in fact, the whole of the Dharma is not about sort of losing ourselves in a hole and cave and disappearing and running away. It's really right there in the kind of real meeting point of people with samsara, in the middle of samsara with their difficulty. The Dharma is very active. I'm thinking of, for example, of in the Vietnam War, the peace walks that we did in Israel and are happening also all over the world until today are based on an old concept of the Dharma Yatra. And the Dharma Yatra is the peace walks that, for example, in the Vietnam War and the Cambodian War, the monks, at great risk to themselves, will be walking around the fields and the cities and so on, saying, put down your guns, kill your hate, don't kill each other. Kill your hate, kill your anger, don't kill human beings. And you know, it's active. The Dharma is active, and compassion is active. It's not passive. The whole of the Dharma is not passive. So the four Brahma Viharas. And I want to give them a slightly different description. Metta, you could say, is loving the world. Compassion, Karuna, is crying with the cry of the world. Mudita, joy, is laughing and dancing with the joy of the world. And upekkha, the fourth one, which is equanimity in English, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Upekkha is living with the existence of the world, being in existence. It's so upekkha is the fourth. Equanimity is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas. All of these Brahma Viharas, don't forget, like I said before, are heavenly. Heavenly, Ashmini, they are great. They are boundless. They don't have limits. just like I said about compassion. No limits, no measurement. They are immeasurable. That's the language of the Dharma. They are immeasurable. They cannot be measured. So, there is equanimity is really important, because when we have love, compassion, our heart jumps. Our heart is wild. We experienced it here in the retreat. Like I said, 1 minute like this, 1 minute like that. Then we have fears. Then we have no feelings. Ki'ilu, no feelings. Of course we have feelings, but like, my heart is closed, my heart is open, my heart is closed, my heart is open. Compassion is there, compassion is not there. Now I feel vulnerable, now I don't feel vulnerable. Now, there's something fragile, even in the heart language of the metta and mudita and karuna, compassion. Equanimity is needed because it brings a ground of steadiness, a ground of protection. We need to have protection. And the protection is not walls around us, like chomot, shirion, shield. The shield is the self, is the ego. The ego is busy with shield. We need protection in another place. And that protection is invisible. It means we can't be destroyed, but we need to be touched. If we're not touched, then we have no compassion, no metta, and no mudita. Compassion, metta, and mudita are about being totally open to the experiences of the world and not closed down behind shirion, right? So what can we have instead of a shirion? We need a shirion which is inside, which is invisible, which allows us to be totally open and not destroyed, and not destroyed, not hurt. And so equanimity is something that we learn through practice as a kind of deep steadiness in the middle of things. And I think it's what we're learning here, what you've been learning here, even though we didn't talk about it. You can sit 45 minutes. The room has been sometimes muzzed, quiet and steady, and everyone's sitting. I know that inside you might be burning, well, my back is hurting, my heart is going crazy, my mind is... But nevertheless, you're managing. You're not running out of the meditation hall screaming. Has happened. It does happen sometimes. But actually, the fact that you can sit in the middle of this, right in the middle of this, is actually very powerful. If you can sit in the middle of all this stuff going on inside us, we can actually sit in the middle of anything. Then it's easy stuff to go and sit in the middle of a VAD meeting in don't know where, or a whatever, or in the middle of the argument with your mother, or all that's easy after this. We've been doing something much more difficult, and we're sitting steady and having all that stuff going on. Wow. So we learn equanimity, we learn steadiness, and it's a bit like a ship. You know, in the ships, they have a weight at the bottom of the ship. Sometimes they put in water at the bottom of the ship. So there's weight at the bottom, and then the ship doesn't fall every wave, but it's steady. In English, you call it ballast at the bottom of the ship. A weight, so it doesn't roll. So it's something that's one way of looking at it. It's not so exact, because equanimity is not like being a rock. It's more like being zchuchit, glass, that we're open to everything, but it doesn't stick, hurt, and destroy us, but we're open. And we're welcoming life. We're welcoming life. I must say, for an image that came to me just now, which is really, really funny. I remember a scene from a Charlie Chaplin film in Charlie Chaplin in the circus, where he was running away from a policeman. And that's what happens a lot with Charlie Chaplin. And he ran into a room of mirrors. Do you remember it? He ran into a room of mirrors, and then his hat fell off, and he was trying to find his hat, and he couldn't find it because the mirrors were showing his hat in every possible place. So he was trying to find it, and he couldn't pick up his hat, and he kept bumping into the mirrors. And then after that, the policeman came in, and him and the policeman were chasing each other round and round. And the policeman couldn't find out where Chaplin was because it was all in all the mirrors, and it was totally crazy and hilarious. And I think it's an image that we can't be hurt if we can't be found. So only if we're a somebody, a person, me, a subject that is experiencing all the experiences and is right inside our experiences, and there's a vulnerability in that. But as much, I think I'll end with this, as we can live with the big view, which is a view, a point of view, nekudah mabat or nekudah ityachasut, a point of reference of life, rather than a point of reference all the time of me, then also equanimity, we can't be hurt. And that's the fourth of the Brahma Viharas. Thank you. So we'll take a few moments of quiet.